tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 455 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Crocodile.
Hello.
So, yeah, Croc, as we discussed last week, Seda is going to be out the next 2 weeks. Not surprising, he's visiting family for the holidays, so it's just going to be you and me tonight. Let's go ahead and start out. We've got quite a bit of news to talk about here. Not a lot of it is Toonami related, but most of it is Toonami adjacent. The first thing that is directly Toonami related is they did show this weekend the promo for the Dandadan Marathon. They also mentioned the sneak peek as well.
I didn't really elaborate on what it was, but I think going with the first episode of season 2 makes no sense.
Yeah, it was hard to tell. I don't know if they showed clips from more than season 2. Are more than episode 1 of season 2, but I haven't seen it, so I don't know for sure.
Well, I don't think they showed any clips from season 2. I would have recognized them if I saw them, but everything they showed is just bits of season 1.
Okay. Yeah, it most likely it's the first episode of season 2, like we've been speculating. It could be some weird mashup thing they created. I doubt it. It's probably just the episode. I hope it is, actually. That'd be kind of cool. And it was pretty good promo, too, and keeping people interested in Dandadan, because there's more related to Dandadan and several other shows. Why don't you go into this?
Okay, sure. Well, like, we already knew that back when Dandadan Season 2 ended in Japan, that there was a Season 3 announcement. It happened, like, right after the show ended, and it's not uncommon these days for, like, new season announcements to happen right after a show ends or within a few weeks afterwards. Again, sometimes you have to wait years for a sequel, but sometimes it's just like, no, we've already been greenlit and we're just letting you know so you get hyped for next season. We knew a season 3 was coming already. We didn't know when. And it was just recently announced the past few days when they had a big announcement, a lot of going on at Jump Festa, which is a big convention for Shonen Jump and like related properties. But also I think other anime kind of like hover around it. So I think there are other anime not related to Jump that also get announcements. It's like everyone's like kind of, I don't know, not a convention, but maybe like I don't know if it's E3 or whatever, but like around this time this year, there's always a bunch of announcements for a bunch of different shows, usually focused around Jump properties, but definitely not exclusively. For Dandadan, they showed a new promo, or a new promo arc specifically for season 3, and even a date for it. And it's not coming out until 2027. Which is, on one hand, disappointing because we all love Dandadan. We want to see more of it sooner. But on the other hand, like, obviously, it takes time to make quality animation. We want to let animators cook, make sure they have a humane schedule, make sure they deliver a quality product. So it's going to be awesome. No matter when it comes out, as long as Science Saru kind of gives it their all, like, as they've normally been doing. They released Sanda recently, which is pretty... I haven't watched the entire series yet, but I've been watching it. It's been pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think they have a Ghost in the Shell remake coming up this year. Like, so they have things going on, so we definitely don't want to rush the things they're already working on, nor do we want them to rush Dandadan Season 3. So let animators cook, let them work at a humane pace and schedule, whatever. But, yeah, so the next season of Dandadan, which I assume will either be... They have enough material to do another 24 episodes at least, and probably more than that. So it might be season 3's 12 episodes, and then, or whatever, and then season 4 is announced. It might have a similar regime like that, but regardless, new Dandadan is coming 2027.
Yeah.
When in 2027, we don't know. It could be beginning of the year, could be middle of the year, could be end of the year. But obviously, even once it comes out in Japan, there's going to be a delay before it gets to Toonami. But regardless, we know for sure new Dandadan is coming in about when.
So... That wasn't the only show announced at the Jump Festa part. The three other Jump-related properties also had new trailers for upcoming seasons released. Again, some of them in 2026, but one of them in 2027. I think it's interesting that they're announcing these shows so far out. Well, actually, three more. So I just remembered the third one. But I'll go through these really quickly. We have Bleach. This is the final core, I believe, of Thousand Year Blood War. That's going to be in July of 2026, so we actually have a month for that one. So that it will be the end of Bleach. It's still kind of surprising to me that Bleach I still have it in my head for some reason that because it had aired on Netflix, I thought that it had already completed, but it's not done.
Aaron Hulu, to be clear. It was Disney Hulu, not Netflix.
Oh, was that right? Okay, my bad. Did it appear on Netflix also? Because I always associate it with Netflix.
I don't know if Blood War ever appeared on Netflix. Maybe the original series did, but I'm not sure.
All right, maybe I'm just
mistaken. But Blood War is definitely a Disney Hulu thing on our side of the Pacific.
Okay, anyway. Yeah, I was mistaken then. All right. Another show announced for 2026 will be the return of Black Clover, the second season. This is actually the second trailer that they've shown for the. But although I think this one may be the one with the most new content. Notable thing about this trailer is that the animation style looks pretty good. It feels like they're kind of stepping up a little bit in quality when it comes to the animation.
Yeah, I would say like we all recall that the first big chunk or most of Black Clover was honestly pretty terrible production-wise. But near the end, they really start cooking. And, like, you could see the Sakuga, like the production got better. More talented animators hopped on board. And so like this seems to be taking from the second half of the later half of the series in which they got their shit together. And of course, they're taking their time with this. It's coming out in 2026. I think the manga's had a fair number of hiatuses, but there's still been a long break since the previous season.
Still going on.
So like, I think they're going to hit the ground running in terms of like just being putting their fourth or A game in terms of quality production. So
I will say that I'm not.
Black Clover has always had its issues, but it's definitely looking like the second season is going to be at least very strong production wise.
Yeah, the quality looks better. And I'm not like excited for that one. I mean, Black Clover was fine to me, but like I don't crave that. But I would watch it if it comes to Toonami. So it's interesting. But I think. Like, having more recently been watching Blue Exorcist, like, Blue Exorcist is way better than Black Clover to me.
Writing-wise, like, definitely. Like, I would say, actually, the production of, like, when Black Clover's production actually got good, it's definitely a better produced show than Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist has advantage of, like, good characters and, like, interesting plots and, you know, all the other things that make a show good, right? So,
another show announced. This one coming in 2027 will be season 3 of Mashle. Again, this is very relevant to Toonami. None of these three, by the way, have been confirmed for Toonami, but they very likely, at least Bleach is likely to come, I would assume, but we don't know anything at this point. But Mashle season 3, so yeah, we will be finishing up season 2 here not too long, and then season 3 will be out there waiting for us to potentially show that on Toonami in the future.
It's impressive that, like, my understanding is that the Mashle manga ended a while ago. I don't know exactly when it ended, but it's been over for a while. But I guess it's been true of the Dr. Stone manga as well. Yeah. But it's still cool that these shows that have, like, definitely ended are still getting full adaptations and, like, basically pretty faithful, generally well-produced, maybe not 10 out of 10 adaptations, but still pretty strong adaptations overall. And so it's no longer the days where, like, just... I mean, these anime are obviously still made for promoting the IP and the manga and so on and so forth. But, like, the days where we just so often just get a little bit of an anime and, like, the rest, all right, go fetch the manga now and if you want the rest.
I felt like a lot of shows kind of drop, like, they start making the anime with the intention of running it to the end, but then, like, I guess, like, maybe viewership dies down or something or whatever, and they don't finish it, which is frustrating. But you're right. I am surprised to see Mashle continue to be made, Black Clover continue to be made, considering those are, you know, they're not the top tier manga, but yet they continue to have their animes made. And then the Dr. Stone one also surprised me. It's been done for a long time. But no, they're finishing it out. I mean, this will be... The fourth thing that we're mentioning here is that they released a new trailer for Core 3 of the final season of Dr. Stone, which will be the final core of that show, will be the end of Dr. Stone. And, you know, that's another one. I really wish Dr. Stone would come back to the block because season 3 is, or I get the season numbers mixed up, but the final season has just been really great. And it'd be great if they can bring that back to the block. But yeah, new trailer was dropped for that as well. I watched it. I know you didn't because you're avoiding spoilers, and I don't blame you. But for people who have seen it, I will say the trailer that they released the last couple of days was the same as the trailer that they released months ago, but they did add an additional scene to the end of the trailer that was new, so revealing another new character. So anyway, that's all I'll say. But yeah, Dr. Stone as well. But in that one also... I think, is coming next year, I believe. 2026?
Yeah, I think this is like the last part. Yeah, because it's the last part. It's part three of the final season of Dr. Stone, sort of finishing it off. So yeah, it's going to be, I think it might be January. I think next month is the last part of Dr. Stone.
I
don't
remember. Yeah, I hope so.
They already did, like, I think at least first part of the first third of the last season, at least I know already aired. Second third probably already aired too. Again, I have not been super following it, just again to try to avoid spoilers, but like I'm pretty sure they're wrapping things up. Like,
yeah, it's not January. It looks like it's in April.
Okay.
But yeah, it is going to be next year. So that'll be the end of Dr. Stone. Bring it to Toonami, guys. That would be really, really good.
So I think it's a good contrast. Like, we have Black Clover and is still going, obviously. Dr. Stone and Mashle have been over for a while. Bleach is kind of still going in the sense that they've already confirmed, well, this is a while ago, that the last core of Bleach is going to add a lot of new material and original material to basically flesh out the ending. Because I'm sure you heard that the ending was pretty disappointing. Mm-hmm. There was like concerns that maybe Kubo was rushed or his health was failing at that point. So like, you know, yeah, kind of just like get it all out of the way, so to speak. So like cores 1, 2, and 3 of the Thousand Year War of Bleach adapted about 60-ish chapters, I believe. But from where core 3 ends, there's only about 20 to 25 chapters left until the end of the manga. So obviously, since they're doing a full season of it, they obviously have to add a lot. And they already said they're going to add a lot. I think if you already checked the trailer, there's very things in there. I've not read the manga, but I know for people who have read the manga, they've said, look at the trailer, there's already stuff in there that was not in the manga at all. So they're like extending stuff, adding new stuff. So like maybe things, who dies, who lives, might change a little bit to some degree. Obviously, I think the baggers are going to lose no matter what because it's Bleach. But expect a lot of changes in new material in the last season of Bleach. So it's still kind of in a way still going. And then, of course, there's the question of like, is the Hell Arc going to ever be animated or what's going on with that? But that's obviously probably a conversation for a year down the line from now.
Yeah.
Oh, one more thing I want to say is that I think there's been some speculation. I've seen people make this point on in the thread and in elsewhere on the internet and whatnot. That there might be a reason that we're getting so many adaptations of manga and whatnot that are already over. They think there's probably a growing realization in Japan about how useful anime itself is as a kind of a tool, like in the West and whatnot. Because obviously manga is internationally popular, obviously, but like anime itself is just like kind of blowing up. I mean, it's already been blowing up. Like, obviously, we're not in the days of the 90s or 80s. We haven't been in those days for a long time. But like, you've seen the success of the Chainsaw Man movie. You see the success of Demon Slayer, a lot of other shows. Jujutsu Kaisen's blowing up. Like, anime in itself is like super hot to the point where I think a lot of Japanese companies are saying themselves, like, okay, this manga's over, or like maybe it's not super useful to promote it in Japan itself, but just having this anime is good for us to be able to export it to America and other places, and that has value in itself. And so it's like a money-making enterprise in itself that way. So that might explain why we're getting so many more anime adaptations of stuff that in the past may have not been adapted. Because, oh, the manga's been over, what's the point? But now is a more of a point because it's actually just useful in itself. I think that's the point people have been making, and I think
that's interesting. I mean, I would have thought that would have been always the case.
True, but I think it's extra, like, even in most recent years, I think like Demon Slayer made like 150 million in the US alone or something crazy, and I think Chainsaw Man made less than that, but still being blowing up. And then
yeah, that's more to do with movies, though. That's more to do with movies. I mean, Dr. Stone is being turned into a movie.
Sure. But I think just anime in general is so hot. I mean, it's been getting hot for a while. It's not just a new phenomenon, obviously. But even recently, in the past few years, it was getting so hot that I think they're seeing advantages just making more anime and just adapting more stuff. I think there's some shows like, I've never read the manga, but I think Siren was a manga from years back that people liked that got canceled prematurely. That's getting anime. I've never seen Hitman Reborn, but that's getting a new anime. World Trigger is getting a remake from the Surf season, was like kind of shittily adapted. Like, I think they're just realizing, like, let's make more anime because it makes us more money, especially overseas. And so,
yeah, I think there is something to be said about the Japanese animators and the animation studios kind of surprisingly kind of opening their eyes to the fact that, oh, okay, we can really kind of start to our stuff is really being seen overseas, because I definitely have heard interviews with anime creators and mangas creators who talk about the fact that they don't ever think about that. Like they've in the past always ever just thought about the Japanese market, and they've never thought about anything else. And I think maybe that perception could be changing, of course, because you're, like you said, there's obviously a lot of global demand for anime, more than maybe they've realized. But I think that demand was always there, but maybe it's greater now. But regardless of whether it's greater or not, I think that their eyes are open to it. You know, they're more
right. Like, obviously, conscious the demand of it. For, like, I think definitely anime, like, Japanese entertainment industry has always been one of its strongest exports. But, like, and obviously, this is not the days of the 80s and 90s. It's not the VHS days. It's not the Suncoast days. And, like, we've long past those days. But even compared to, like, the 2010s or whatever, where anime was kind of blowing up, it's, like, really blowing up now. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think we're just seeing the dollar signs too much now.
Yeah, when you see Demon Slayer or Chainsaw Man commercials on television, that's kind of like, whoa, okay, things are a little different. And yeah, you make a great point about the Suncoast video kind of thing, because, like, that's a time when I can think back to anime was being brought to America mostly without any thought on the Japanese side of things. Like, they were making licensing deals, but they weren't even thinking about us as an audience at that point in Japan. They were just like, we're making this for Japanese people. But I think that mindset might be changing.
Stuff like simuldubs are blowing up too. Like, obviously, simuldubs are not a new thing, but, like, you get more and more of them per season. They're more and more up to date with the Japanese productions. Like, it's just kind of,
it's good.
They've really been having an eye on the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Okay, the only other news item I had for this week is, and this is a minor thing, I did notice that they created some new bumps for the commercial breaks. They finally have they've updated some of them. It felt like the first couple of shows had new ones. One that didn't, though, is One Piece. They're still talking about that stupid... The stupid filler arc is still showing up in the One Piece bumps. They need to fix that.
Oh, Bill?
Yeah, yes, Bill.
Bill and Captain Council having an epic battle somewhere in the Grand Line.
If there was one that needed to be updated, it's that one. But I do understand they've just started a new arc, so they need a little time. But yeah. But some of the bumps were updated this week, which was nice to see.
Oh, there's one thing I want to mention. It's not maybe new so much, but I guess this past weekend was the last airing of Naruto on and I'm from the foreseeable future, I guess, you know, adios.
I don't know what to say. It's probably going to come back at some point.
Probably, but, like, it's just, it is noteworthy, I suppose, but I maybe, guess. I don't know. It's something that came to mind, but.
I think we mentioned it last week, but yeah, Naruto's off the block.
The schedule changed, but, like, now it's over, at least for now.
Yeah, maybe. For now. I mean, it's, how many times has this show returned? I mean, come on. It's going to come back probably at some point. But yeah, like I said, a lot of those shows that we talked about earlier about having sequel series, not sequel series, sequel seasons, again, none of those have really been confirmed for Toonami. Not even the Bleach one. I mean, it's likely to happen, I think, with the Bleach one, but we don't know yet. So we'll let you know when we find out more.
I will say a small cause for concern would be, like, for a lot of these 2027 series, obviously they wouldn't show up. If they do show up at Toonami, it wouldn't be the beginning of that year, probably the middle or end of that year. And, of course, this whole merger thing going on, and who knows what might happen with that. So, you know, worst case scenario, Toonami might not exist in 2027 or something. Who knows? But, you know, let's all hope for the best.
I don't think so, yeah. But I would say that, like, one thing of those four shows that we talked about, like the Dr. Stone one, like, there's nothing holding them back from airing that, because that won't happen. Even though that show doesn't come out, the final core doesn't come out until next year, they've got two cores they could be airing now. So
yeah, those are already dubbed and ready to go. So
they're just a matter of, like, so that would be an easy get for Toonami. So yeah.
And same with Fire Force, which has already had the third, like, most of its third season aired. I think the other half of it's airing in April as well, so they could do that, but again, it depends on the licensing and all that nonsense.
I do hope that when we get closer to those some shows leaving, that we get some new or even returning shows coming back that have been gone. That would be nice. Alright, let's move on, because unfortunately I was looking at my notes and a lot happens this week in some of our shows, in Blue Exorcist particularly.
Like, Blue Exorcist was pretty packed, but also it was moving like 500 miles per second, which made it a little hard for me to follow.
We're going to have to breeze through some of this Blue Exorcist stuff because it's just that was a packed episode. But anyway, let's get into the first show of this week's block, which is Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand-Year Blood War, Core 3, Episode 4, The Betrayer. The Betrayer, in this sense, the title is referring to Uryu. This episode, before I begin the rundown, I'll say that this episode pretty much makes it clear to me. I've always been kind of wondering, is Uryu playing somebody, or is he committed? It sounds like, judging by the stuff he says in this episode, he's on the Quincy side here. He's not doing a secret thing here, so.
Well, all I will say is that, I guess, regarding the end of the episode, it's very peculiar that Uryu, who's such a good shot, didn't seem to shoot Ichigo in the head or the heart, just like his liver or something, would be a fatal wound in most circumstances, but we know in anime, if you don't hit for the head or the heart, that's not a fatal wound, and even then, that's sometimes not a fatal wound, but you know what I mean. But
I mean, I wouldn't even put it past the fact that he wouldn't try... I mean, I can understand Uryu not trying to kill Ichigo, even if he's working for the bad guys. But we'll see, I guess. Okay. So this episode starts out, and Ichigo kind of breaks free from that, like, weird stuff that's appearing on him. I don't know what that is. That weird, like, circuitry.
The Quincy blood, like, Yubao activated the Quincy blood in Ichigo's body to strike down Soul King, and then Ichigo broke through that influence.
Yeah, he broke over that influence and started to kind of block Yuhavaha from doing any more damage to the Soul King. Meanwhile, Yorichi does a kind of talisman thing that she puts up, also trying to protect the Soul King in this moment. However, before she's able to complete it, or maybe it doesn't really matter because it fails, because she's suddenly shot in it by Uryu's arrow. Uryu is now there, and he shoots her. And then while she's distracted in that moment, one of the royal guards of Yuhavaha's royal guards shows up, the one that we haven't seen their face, that's in all cloaked. And they do something, and it's made very vague to the viewer what's happening here, other than Yorichi saying, this is a strange magic, or this is a strange power.
Yeah, basically her arm gets eviscerated. They will explain how his power works in a later episode.
Oh, I have to. I mean, it wouldn't be Bleach if they didn't, but right.
Right, but basically her arm gets basically eviscerated, and then she gets, I think, punched, or no, her arm gets eviscerated, and then Yubao, I think, flicks her away, and she like goes flying or something.
Yeah. So she's kind of out of the picture for the moment. That's when Ichigo and Uryu kind of finally meet up, and Uryu says that he's with Yuhavaha because he's a Quincy and he hates the Soul Reapers. And he's kind of going in. I won't go into full details here because it'd take too long. But like basically the gist of it is that we see flashbacks to him learning about the Quincy history. And he's basically on the side of the Quincys because he thinks that what the Quincys have done, or what the Soul Reapers have done to the Quincys, is wrong. And he now does not like Soul Reapers. And that includes each of them.
I will say, to Uryu's credit, like he's probably put up with Soul Society bullshit longer than most people would have, because Mayuri basically did some Quincy genociding in the past and like killed his grandfather specifically, and like Mayuri's still a man in good standing in Soul Society. It'd be like if Mengele was just like, okay, the World War II is over, but Mengele just around, and he's just, oh yeah, he's just Health and Human Services Secretary or something now. And be just like, what the fuck? Like, so, yeah. Uryu legitimately has legitimate reasons to be, like, really pissed with Soul Society, that he's kind of, like, put aside from most of Bleach in ways I thought was kind of, I guess, kind of big of him, but also, like, I'm not sure if it's, like, realistic, or, I don't know, like, he's been pretty forgiving, I would say. So he's kind of earned some, at least some, like, fuck the Soul Society points, if you ask me. But,
and like I said, it's kind of, I think this episode makes it pretty clear to me, as someone who doesn't know what's going to happen, that he's kind of put his cards on the table here and being like, no, Ichigo, we were friends, but I don't like Soul Reapers. Fuck them. And so he's on Yuhabaha's side here.
Homies hate Soul Reapers.
He and Ichigo face off, and that's when Uryu activates his Volstern Deitsch, or however you say that, Volstern Deitsch, or whatever, which is that power where a big cross pop comes out from above them, and then they have wings, and it's like his super move, basically.
It's the Quincy Bankai, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Except that it has a weird German name that's difficult to pronounce.
Right, rather than a Japanese name, yeah.
Yeah, I can say Bankai. All right, that's when we cut to commercial. Come back. We see that Yuhabaha's royal guards have arrived, his main guards, and they're going to have a battle with Chad, Orihime, and Ganju, and we do have a little brief battle here.
This is peak coughing baby versus hydrogen bomb.
Yeah.
Like, Ganju, like, talking shit, but, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, just, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Like, I would understand them, like, trying to do their best to fight these super powerful guys off, but, like, having Ganju, like, talk smack makes it bad. Because he doesn't have any... He doesn't deserve to be able to say those things. These guys are too powerful.
Those fireworks bombs, those are, like, deadliest technique in the Soul Society. I mean, like, who can stand up to those?
I mean, it was... I mean, like, one of the Quincy's even, like, joked about it. He's like, what? Oh, fireworks? Thanks. You know, like, it's like, yeah, it's that bad.
It's literally fireworks. That's literally what they are. Like, oh, it's not even a joke. He just threw fireworks at them.
Anyway, they try to do a little bit. It doesn't do anything. They're outmatched here. We cut back and we see that the right hand of the Soul King, this sort of black mist, opens its eye on the hand and it starts to attack Yuhabaha. And it's sort of having a fight with him, basically. And this is all kind of happening. Everything's happening at the same time. So we're cutting between these things, which is why my notes are kind of erratic here. We go back to the Uryu fight and Uryu and Ichigo, and Uryu says he wants revenge after learning about the Quincy history. I guess I already mentioned that, but yeah, that's kind of when that's revealed here, and then we get the flashbacks.
I'm not sure if it's... I think it's in this fight where Uryu realizes that Ichigo has Quincy blood in him, because Ichigo blocked one of his attacks with a specifically Quincy technique. I think that was the first time that Uryu realized that Ichigo had Quincy blood in him, I believe. But yeah, this whole fight was basically not in the manga. Like, I think it was like a tiny skirmish in the manga, but they really blew it up in the anime, elaborated in full. Like, Uryu didn't use his Bankai here. Like, they added a lot to this fight here.
Interesting. Okay, that's interesting. Speaking of which, his Volstern-Deitsch or Bankai power here is like basically like I refer to it as Macross missiles. If you've ever seen Macross, and when they shoot their missiles out and they go crazy, and there's like 50 of them.
Are you like in a tunnel circus? Honestly, it made me think of a Gundam fight with, like, funnels and bits.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of both, yeah. But, yeah, anyway, it's like that. That's when Ichigo uses his move, Tensuga Jujiso. Is this the first time he's used this?
No, he used it against Yubawa. He used it both against Yubawa, and he used it against Candace as well. I think the first time he saw it was when he did it against Candace. And then he also used it against Yuabao. And so this is the third time he's used it, I believe.
Well, see, I thought it was different because he had the two swords now. But maybe it's not. I don't know.
Yeah, he did the two sword technique both against Candace and against Yuabao.
Okay.
He's done this before.
Okay, I guess I forgot. So yeah, he uses his like new super move here. It's not super effective. And while this is going on, we get amazing choir music, which actually I like. I mean, it's so over the top, but at the same time, it's kind of hype.
Soundtrack is just godlike. It's always been.
Yeah, it's fun. It makes it more interesting when the fights have that dramatic choir singing in the background.
I do think it's important to note the reason that Ichigo's attack was ineffective was because he wasn't trying to kill Uryu. Like, right. He kind of aimed to the side. And that's Uryu calls him out on this. Like, you're not trying to kill me. Like, how can you possibly win? Yuabao called him out on this earlier, too. I think either this episode or last one. Yeah. Ichigo is not playing to kill. And, like, you can't beat these guys if you hold back because they're really strong. Like, you can't win this way. But Ichigo is a shonen protagonist, and I was saying, like, you're my friend, and I can't kill the main villain because I'm the main character, and yada, yada, you know, so.
Right, and so that's when Uryu is like, let me show you how it's done, and he attacks Ichigo and, quote-unquote, kills him. And I have, like, a slash, sarcasm note here in my notes here.
Yeah.
He doesn't kill him.
Right.
It's very much like depicted like, oh my God, he's killed Ichigo, which of course he can't.
Right. And of course the other, Royal Guard, I think it was, Drawled as the Valkyrie guy, right? He was like, ah, now you're one of us, yada, yada, yada. He's all celebrating. But you'll notice, the blonde guy, Yogg.
He was watching.
Yeah. He was watching very like, not entirely convinced, if you ask me, but...
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
At least most of the Royal Guard think he's on their... You know, Uryu's all up in their side now, but...
Yeah. We get the credits, and then on our post-credit scene, we see, basically, Yuhabaha is still battling the right hand, but he wins. He defeats the right hand, cracks open the Soul King, extracts the Soul King's limbless body, and then absorbs him, and basically... has won. And yeah, that's where the episode ends. So
I do think it would have been more persuasive if Uryu had, because obviously Uryu knew this was going to happen, or at least I feel he knew this was going to happen. I think Uryu would have made a more persuasive argument if it was like, Ichigo's asking him, why are you doing this? You want to destroy everything. And Uryu's like, blah, 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 I'm a Quincy. I think it would just be more persuasive if Uryu said, no, I'm not going to destroy everything. I'm going to remake everything in a world that's more just to Quincy's, which is basically what Uryubara wants to do. He wants to SMT the world and just remake it.
Right.
And I think it would have been more persuasive just Uryu said that rather than... Because you could make the argument, why, if you kill the Soul King and destroy everything, you're destroying yourself. How does that work? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that is but confusing.
If it's like, I'm going to remake the world, oh, that does make sense, even if it just involves maybe the death of all Soul Reapers. But at least... You as Quincy would not die. That makes sense, right? So
I guess, but like, I think that the Soul Reapers and the people of most worlds wouldn't want anything to change.
Oh, so of course.
They're going to fight that. But yeah, like...
Of course.
Yeah, so that's where the episode ends. It's like, I mean, Yuhabaha's vision of the future has come true. He's accomplished what he set out to do. We'll see where it screws up here because we are obviously still in... This core is called The Conflict. I don't think I've ever mentioned that on the podcast. That's the title for this season, so to speak. It's called The Conflict. The conflict isn't over, so...
Still conflicting. And
how many more episodes of Conflict do we have? I don't even know.
No, this is the fourth episode, so I think we have...
Oh, wow.
Nine?
Okay.
Eight or nine?
Yeah, we've got a lot of conflict left. Okay.
I will note, it's probably worth mentioning, when we talk about Yubao's vision, his face changes, like his eyes, like his whole face is covered in, like, goop and eyes and whatnot. And you saw it in the opening, if you looked at it closely.
I saw it, yeah. I recognized it right away. It's that same look where he's like, I thought in the opening that was kind of like metaphorical or some kind of artistic thing they were doing, but now I'm seeing that that's straight up from the show. So, interesting. He's got the supervision now, super duper vision. So, yeah, we'll see what happens next week when, well, not next week, actually in 2 weeks. We'll see what Yuhabaha does with this power. I'm excited to see, actually. I'm kind of curious. I like the fact that we haven't done a lot of like, we Yuhabaha kind of like did his first attack a long time ago, and then that kind of quote unquote failed, didn't really complete it. But this second attack, he's been, like, pretty much successful, so it's interesting. Okay, well, that will do it for Bleach. And like I said, we've got a very lore-rich episode of Blue Exorcist to get into, so let's start. Blue Exorcist, Beyond the Snow Saga, Episode 7, Variant Leaves. Not sure about that title. Don't know what that means. Variant leaves. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, honestly. I'll
have to think about that one. All right. So let's get into it. Light and Bond are interrogating those ex-exorcists. Light is very aggressive about this, to the point where Bond has to kind of hold him back. There's a lot of allusions in this episode about the fact that Light is very much demon-like. And this is kind of that happening here, where he's not really... He's not moral.
I wouldn't have thought of him as demon-like. I would have thought of him more as, like, maybe not over-ambitious, but...
Well, he seems to lack a moral code or a moral core. And he kind of even mentions a couple of times that, like, Bond, I need you to kind of check me because I'm going to go overboard.
Yeah, overly enthusiastic, I think is how I'd describe it.
Yeah, but like to a point where he's willing to let people die. And that's where I start to feel like he's like a demon, like in essence, because it's like he doesn't care about human life.
I don't know. I feel like enough humans have done that it's well within like the range variation of human attitude. You're just like, I don't know. But he's definitely overly enthusiastic. Yeah, at the very least.
Well, this old guy, unfortunately, gets the brunt of it, and he, under duress, admits, he's like, I'm going to say it, even though it'll kill me, I'm going to tell you, we were part of Section 13, and we were working on the elixir, and before he gets to say anything more, literal death shows up and kills this guy, because this guy had a special thing on his arm called the Morinoth Contract, which basically is like a thing where if you give out a secret...
It's NDA, but like the worst kind.
Yeah. They have a similar thing in Harry Potter, where if like you give out the secret, then you just die. In this world, death literally appears and kills him, and the guy dies. Right,
you get reaped like a fucking scythe looking creature.
It looked kind of like death. Yeah, I think, and they called him.
I think it was in the back of his neck, right? Not his arm, back of his neck, right?
It was somewhere. I don't remember. The Harry Potter, they put it on the arm, but I don't know what they did here. I forget, but he had one nonetheless. Then before they get too much information, right after they get the information, suddenly both Light and Bond are transported magically by Mephisto into a hot, I'm sorry. That happens later. This is confusing because there's two hot bath scenes in this episode. The first one.
Yeah. A lot of bathing going on.
There's a lot of bathing. So anyway, Light and Bond go back to the True Cross Academy and Light confronts Mephisto, who's in his bath, taking a bath, and he's very like, oh, you're walking in on me, this is embarrassing, or whatever, like he would, but he gets all up in his face, and he's like, hey, you know, what's going on here, what's this Section 13, you know stuff, just tell me what's going on, and Mephisto kind of just gives him a hint, and he says, well, you know, you could find out more if you learn about the key in the hand, and it's kind of like this vague phrase, and he's like, all right. And then they leave.
I think this is, at this point, don't they like opine on that Mephisto's body is like decaying? I think
it is weird. Yeah, I don't know what that is. If that's decaying or if he just has scars or what that is.
I mean, I think it's a precursor to the revelations that happen later in the episode with all these.
It could be. Yeah, know. There's this. Yeah, we'll get to that. But basically, essentially, these Bahal demons are like deteriorating or that they die. I don't know. It's strange. Anyway, we'll get to that. So anyway, this. Turns out to be enough of a clue for Light to kind of figure out something, and we'll come back to that in a minute. There is a very brief scene right before we cut to commercial where Shimi is talking with her mom, and she's basically asking her mom, kind of not really for permission, but just sort of her blessing to be like,
letting her know how it's going to go down.
Yeah, she's like, I want to join the exorcist school. I want to become an exorcist. And the scene kind of ends with her mom being like, well, if you're going to do that, I need to tell you something important. But she doesn't tell it. I mean, we don't hear it.
Secret ever, and then we never come back to the rest of the episode.
Yeah, and I'm sure that'll come back later. Something about her past.
Shimmy, you're a demon.
you're the demon of cuteness, apparently. Or something, I don't know. We'll find out later. After the break, we come back, and this is... I'm going to breeze through this again, because there's a lot that happens here. But basically, the gist of it is that they discover that there's this old monastery place... that if you do like a special puzzle, they figure out the puzzle, the key in the hand, which is all just like you shine a light on this keyhole with the hand.
This is just really sort of an RPG. You do the quest and you get like the lore dump that explains the entire world thing.
Yeah, it reminded me of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, where you kind of like, you have to shine the light on this part of the model, you know. It was kind of like that. Anyway, they shine the light and then the whole area changes and they're kind of like transported into this, like, they kind of described it as like a pocket dimension. But anyway, the real place is there in that pocket dimension. It was put there magically. And light recognizes that, oh, this is a place called the Asylum. And this is where...
That's not ominous at all.
Yeah. This is where, over the next 5 to 6 minutes, we get a huge, huge lore drop. And then when we get back in a minute, and then like they get teleported back to Mephisto, we get even bigger lore drops. But the first part of the lore drop is we learn that the Asylum was the place where the Blue Knight event happened. The thing that started the series. They're walking around. Bond sees what he thinks are like hospital tables, and Light's like, oh no, look closer. Those are delivery tables for people to have babies.
Oh yeah, that was a creepy realization. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they see these tubes with human specimens and notes, and he puts it together that this is Section 13, and what they were doing is they were making clones. So they could be vessels for what are called the Baal being like the most powerful demons in the, I don't want to say hell. They have a name for it. Gehenna, I think.
Yeah, it's Gehenna. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's when Mephisto suddenly transports them, snaps his finger, transports them into his bath. And now they're like in his bath and he's kind of there. He's not in the bath, but he transports them into the bath. He's like, oh, you guys stink. And wait, you're all smelly.
Didn't they come across some, vats with like clones that started escaping trying to kill them.
Yeah, that's when Mephisto transported them away. Right when they were like, oh, look, there's a clone of Mephisto's brother. I forget his name, the green haired guy.
Lucifer? Oh, no, a Maimon.
A Maimon, yeah. They're like, oh my God, it's a Maimon. And then they see some others.
Yeah, this is just they found Umbrella Lab and now are going through the
pretty much
archives and
still
activate the test tubes and whatnot. Vats or whatever.
And I think the point is that they kind of were discovering everything. And I think Mephisto realized this and he's like, nope, come here, snaps him. And then he decides to explain the plot of the show. So let me run through this. So he explains that in Gehenna, aka hell or whatever, there is a kind of power structure. And there are these beings called the Baal. They're underneath Satan, but they are like, you know, strong. And these Baal are basically, they started out as sort of like constructs. So like, for example, Mephisto represents time. That's the construct that he represents.
I would say concepts more than constructs, like ideas and concepts. Like it's actually kind of delving how to like supernatural beings and gods and whatnot were created in our mythology. Like, obviously we have a god and a sun, because a god is like the concept of the sun and sunlight and whatnot. It's kind of like indirectly kind of dovetailed in the same way that mythology and deities and demons and whatnot were created in real life. How they were concepts that can represent different, you know, ideas and
fears. Yes, different concepts. I mean, for lack of a better term,
Concepts.
Also, that there were basically two factions in Gehenna. I guess there technically still are two factions. There's the faction that sides on the side of Lucifer, which is the faction that wants to battle with humans. And there's the side that Mephisto's on, which is called the Order, which is the one that wants to work with humans and that doesn't want to destroy the human world or whatever.
I think it was something of fact, like this is a little hard to explain. And obviously my memory is a little shot because I was absorbing this all for the first time. And I was a little like, whoa, you're throwing a lot at me. It was kind of like, there were these concepts, like the demons were initially ideas and concepts. They eventually became able to possess humans or develop physicality. They never had bodies before the cloning technology happened.
No, so, like, they didn't. They didn't have the cloning thing is a new thing. So,
right.
They basically said in ancient times, which we're talking like thousands and thousands of years ago, probably longer. I don't know. The Baal were just like bodiless concepts, but then
they gained bodies.
They took physical form. Yes, they got physical form. I don't know. It's very Tolkien-esque, where it's just like it's not really explained how they just sort of had bodies suddenly. It's like, oh, we have bodies now.
I think they possessed humans because I think it's obviously supernatural is it worked this way, but obviously Supernatural took from a bunch of different inspirations. But they possessed human bodies and gained the physicality, and they were like, holy shit, being physical is real. And so they wanted to, I think it was Lucifer and some of his minions were trying to, like, abuse humans and use them for their own ends, similar to, I think...
Well, that happens... Kind of you're jumping ahead a little bit. You're missing something important here. So I don't know if they took human bodies or they just got them. I thought they just got them because I don't remember them saying anything about stealing bodies. I think they just had
them. Pretty sure, because we know, like, a whole part of the very beginning of Blue Exorcist was demons possessing humans. So we know that's a thing they can do already. I'm pretty sure that's how they first got physical bodies, by possessing early humans back 10,000 years ago or whatever, many years ago.
Maybe. But see, the thing is, I think Mephisto's had his body for hundreds and hundreds of years. And no human lives that long, so I don't think that's right.
I thought his body was more recent than that, though.
No, because he talks about, in the very next scene, he talks about 100 years ago is when... he and Lucifer had a sit down, and we see this scene. They're at a table. And the thing is that, unfortunately, unlike most of the Baha'i, Lucifer's body is constantly, like, dying. And he hates this. He hates this constant, like, death cycle that he's in. And it's driving him crazy to the point that he's finally snapped. This happened 100 years ago. He's decided that he's snapped, right, and he wants to destroy the planet. He literally uses the word planet. He wants to destroy the planet so that his suffering can end.
Right, we realize at this point Lucifer is not trying some grand light path SMT villain. He's just like a petty bitch. That's basically what we learned.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mephisto kind of feels a little sorry for him here, a little bit. And this is why we understand a little bit why they call themselves brothers and stuff, because it's like...
I mean, Lucifer's situation is bad, but like you don't take it out.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I don't know if you ever see the movie... go ahead, what are you going to say?
No, I was going to say, like, they definitely made a point that, like, Lucifer, he goes through bodies really fast. And so, like, the Baha'i demons can go through multiple bodies. He goes through his really fast, but most demons can go through theirs a lot slower, so... I think that may be part of the decay. Like, if Mephisto has had his body for at least 100 years, obviously humans can live to be 100 years old, but, like, they don't usually are in great shape after 100 years. But obviously him being a demon can, like, maybe slow that down to some degree. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Mephisto can occupy a human body for longer than normal human can live, but, like, only to a certain point. So but that might be why his body's decaying, like, it's over 100 years old.
But... Maybe, but, like, why does he look the same?
Well, yes, it's a demon-possessed body. I think over 100 years, it's obviously decaying that we see that when he's in the bath, like, his body's decaying. But I would say just a demon-possessed body doesn't necessarily age like a human normally would, but they still have a finite timeline, which is a surprise to me because I just figured demons just, like, live for either hundreds and hundreds of years or live forever until they're actually straight up killed. So that their physical bodies have a finite limit is actually kind of a new revelation. But that final limit may still be 100, 200, 300 years, except for Lucifer, who's just
That's different, yeah. Lucifer is the odd guy out because his body, his ability to stay alive is diminished dramatically. Anyway, yeah, you might be right. Maybe Mephisto 150 years ago or 200 years ago took over a guy's body and has kept the same body. I don't know, but whatever. We'll find out, I think. Anyway, Mephisto's like, no, because remember, Mephisto wants to keep humans around. He likes the human world. And like you said earlier, they allude to the fact that when the Baal got their physical forms, when they took physical forms or whether they stole bodies or whatever, they lavished in it. Like, they were just like, suddenly the five senses were available to them. They could touch and smell and taste, and they loved it. Everything. Yeah, they even showed a scene of one of them, like, with a big harem and everything. And so it's like, obviously, Mephisto's all on that side. He wants to keep that around. And so he makes a deal with Lucifer here, and he's like, okay, well, wait a minute. Have you ever heard of this thing called cloning? And he's like, explains, and that's when Mephisto kind of goes on and he explains to Light and Bond that it was Mephisto who created Section 13 in order to make a clone specifically for Lucifer so that he wouldn't die again in this cycle. He could live longer. That was the point.
This is the big part of the immortality elixir or whatnot. You're trying to find a vessel that just doesn't decay.
And this leads up to the biggest revelation, the kind of the big plot point that we end the episode on, is that during this entire process of creating these clones with the intention of sucking in these Baal souls into them, they accidentally created a vessel that Satan got into. Satan was suddenly in physical form, and this is what caused the Blue Knight incident.
Oopsie daisy.
Kicked off everything. So, yes.
And so it's this Satan, this physical form, that went ahead and fucked basically Rin and Yukio's mother, and that's how they were born.
I guess.
That basically how that worked?
It's either that, or I was thinking, I wonder if Yukio and Rin were other, like, babies in the Section 13 facility.
I'm pretty sure they explicitly said they were not. Wouldn't they be too young?
I don't know. Probably. Well, no, I don't know. No, because when the Satan thing happens, that was during the Blue Knight. And that's when they were born. So I think it has... I don't know. It could be... I'm kind of... When I ended the episode, I was thinking, oh... Because they kept showing all those babies being born there. And I'm like, oh, was Rin and Yukio there?
I guess it's something we definitely both need to rewatch the episode because they're just so extra-packed.
Oh, my gosh. And
they're going a mile a minute.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure they were explicit that they were not... Test two babies from the facility.
Okay. And that I could have, again, I'll admit, a lot happened in this episode. I might have missed that.
I definitely rewatched episode two.
But I mean, it says that, yeah. Anyway, but the big takeaways we can take away from this episode, aside from the fact that I love that the show is directly addressing these major plot points about the overarching story of the series here. Feels like we've gone seasons with not knowing anything, and now we've got this huge lore drop. We also know specifically where Mephisto lies in everything, where Lucifer lies in everything, what their goals are, what's going on. We know pretty much all of the playing pieces because they kept making it vague. They're like, what are you doing, Mephisto? What are you doing? Well, we know what he's doing now. We know exactly what's going on for the most part. And he is in a battle with Lucifer, and we know why. So, yeah, it's crazy. Anything else? I mean, I think we've covered it all, but my gosh, that was a super lore drop of an episode.
I think one thing we may have not covered that's worth mentioning is that Bond, upon realizing this, thinks of Yuku and Rin, and all he can think about is feels empathy and pity, and like, he's like, man, these two brothers have so much shit on their shoulders. It's like, oh my fucking god, I feel so bad for them. I think, you know, Bond just shows he's like an empathetic guy. He cares about his friends, he cares about other people. And all this, during these big lore drama dumps, he's just thinking about his friends. I mean, like, man, you guys have some shit off not to deal with. I'm like, I feel bad for you guys. I want to help you out. Like, I don't think he says that, but it's pretty implicit that Bond's always been a helpful guy, kind of caring about other people. But now that he understands the context and the background, he's like, he's going to be there for them as he can be. And, like, he's just, again, showing his empathy and his compassion for other people.
Yeah, another thing Bond did, too, in this episode is he kind of, I guess I think it was done in an inner monologue way, but he thinks about or talks about the fact that, like, he kind of realizes what kind of person Light is. I think he even says something like, he's like, oh, my master, like, I don't know, maybe I made the mistake of following this guy. He's a maniac. He's crazy. And that's when they had that conversation, too, about, like, Bond actually stops him at a certain point from attacking somebody, and he's like, you're going too far. And then Light's like, oh, I guess I am. And that's when they kind of have this like agreement where he's like, I need you to watch for, you know, Bond, I want you to watch out for me and make sure I don't go too far. So I guess Bond is kind of like going to look after Light. It is weird. And there was a scene too at the final scene with Mephisto and Light being there where Mephisto, I swear, the way I read it, and maybe I'm wrong, but I kind of read it where Mephisto was kind of like given a wink, wink to Light being like, yeah, there's something demon about you.
I don't remember that, but again, the episode was so packed that we definitely both need to rewatch it, but yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to keep that in the back of my mind. I could have misread that moment, but it kind of felt like he was insinuating that while maybe Light is human, there might be something demon about him because it explains his bizarre behavior. Because when you think about that character as a whole, Yes, a human could act like that, but it would be very fitting for this series to have that be the traits of a demon.
I do think that's maybe a bit of a cop-out, just in the sense that, like, you can't ascribe all, or you shouldn't ascribe all negative emotions or actions or, like, thought processes to demons. Like, humans are capable of doing that shit on their own well enough. Like, so I don't want to be every time someone is a little out of bounds or like a little wacky or like, oh, they were just a demon all along. I think that's a little like, I don't know if cowardly is the right way to go about it, but it's kind of like, eh. It's, I don't know. I don't feel like you're describing the full human experience if you're kind of going into that well. Not saying they are. I'm just saying if that's how things played out, that might be a little disappointing, but it also depends how to handle it. But
like, I don't know. It to me, I don't know if disappointing, it would just feel very appropriate because I feel like this is a show about demons. So.
No, the real twist is Shem is a demon. That's the real twist here. I've got to save it all for that.
Yeah. That won't happen, but I like to think about it. All right. Well, there you go. Super Lord Dumpy Blue Exorcist. I don't even know what they're going to talk about next week. We'll find out.
They showed a preview. It's a Christmas party where Shemmy dresses up as fat Santa Claus. And then, like think there's a fire and she passes out. And then Izzy, like, trips over and knocks over cake, and then Izumo passes out. So it's going to be, like, Christmas hijinks, like, the week after Christmas.
Right, but it's going to be after the New Year, we're going to have a Christmas episode. If they had just, I mean, I know Toonami can't completely control this, but, man, it would have been perfect for them to have aired that episode this past weekend. Oh, well. Close enough, I guess. All right, let's move on to Mashle. Mashle, Season 2, Episode 7. Mash Burn Dead and the Magical Maestro. Of course, speaking of Margaret. So, Margaret Macron, when the last episode we saw, he got like, Mash did like a super backbreaker on Macron, but then he just got back up and we're like, what? How did he do that? And we learned that he had used sound to cushion his fall, so that's how he was able to survive that.
Similar to how Gaara cushions fall against Rock Lee of Sand, you know,
yeah.
That same thing.
They kind of fight at each other, but then they just, as they're about to collide, they suddenly just both freeze. They both just stop right about they're about to hit each other. And they pause and they realize, and then I think maybe Macaron's the one who mentions it, that like, we're not really all going all out. You're not going all out. I'm not going all out. This isn't a real battle. In this moment when Macaron doesn't attack him, I think I wrote down that Mash kind of goes, chivalry? Wowee. Because he was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I think it was revealed that Mash had a cream puff in his pocket that he was trying not to get squished.
Yes.
So, like, there's a woman come out to take the cream puff away. So, like, I guess Mash could eat it afterwards. And so she walks off the cream puff, and then they go back to fighting.
Yeah, so now they decide, okay, well, we're gonna start taking it more seriously. Macaron starts using more powerful music magic, sound magic, and he uses this attack that basically bursts like Mash's ears, and he's like, what did you think of that, or something, and then Mash's like, huh, I can't hear you.
It's like sheets of music in the form of a fist that Mash tries to punch, because it's like he thinks his energy can punch, but it's just sound, visualized sound, yeah. So it passes through his body, ruptures his eardrums.
Yeah, and then Macaron summons this, he casts a spell, or they cast a spell called Finale, where all these giant speakers appear around, or giant horns appear around them, and then it goes off, and it's like a huge, huge, huge attack, almost nuclear sound attack, everyone in the arena, including Macaron, just assuming, oh yeah, Mash was defeated, and he's like, to the point where he's like, oh, that was too easy. And then suddenly they see that Mash isn't there, and they realize what he had done. He suddenly pops out of the ground and grabs Macaron, and they were like, oh, okay, he dug underground really quickly, and because the sound waves can't penetrate the sound, can't penetrate the ground.
Oh, it does the worst job of it, basically. But, like, I think it was Finn who made the point that to dodge that, he had to move faster than the speed
faster
of sound.
Faster than sound, yeah. Which is very important, as we'll see in a moment, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just the same technique that Kakashi used to bury people in the head first in the sand. Or the dirt or whatever, he just grabs them. So I forget. I remember Kakashi had a specific name for that jutsu, but it's the same exact technique that Master employed here.
Yeah. There's a lot of Naruto going on here.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the explicit references are just incidental, but it's hard to not notice the
Maybe just inspiration might be the right term. Anyway, he grabs Makaron and he does another super mashal magic move called quadriceps magic, guillotine kick. And then that sends him flying. And then he gets on top of Makaron and just starts beating him down like 100 punches a second kind of thing.
Yeah, everyone's confused because they think Macron's on the ropes. And so he's just, Mashal's just being I don't know if overzealous or kind of a poor sport or whatever. Like, Mash, you won. What are you doing? But of course, not Gin realizes that, no, this fight's not over. And Mash is just doing the appropriate thing of just trying to actually beat your opponent who's not actually done yet. So,
well, it's not enough to beat Makaron. And Makaron gets back up and he decides, okay, I'm going to finally fight you with my full power. And he used what's called Sounds Metamorphosis, and he changes, and they turn into a younger version of themselves.
They turn into a twink.
He has hair, and they're like, even Mash is like, you've got hair.
It was interesting that when Macron activated Sound Metamorphosis, like, you saw their body like contort and change, and like claws and fangs showed up, so you thought,
yeah, that was
oh,
weird.
He's going to turn into like a monster, but no, it's just a joke. He just transformed into a twink.
Yeah, turned into a twink, yeah, basically. That's when we cut to commercial. When we come back, we cut away from the excitement at the arena briefly to a room where the white-haired guy, or no, this is a different person, Rio Grants is this character's name.
Well, the blonde-haired guy, right, who was standing up for Mash at the big...
one of the visionaries, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway... He's getting a special report from the big Afro kid. He's like, Mr. Rio, big report. We've learned that Innocent Zero is on the move. And they're like, oh, they're up to something new. And the guy's like, no, it's not just Innocent Zero. It's the actual person. Innocent Zero himself is on the move. And they're like, oh, no.
I think we forgot to mention this, but was it at the very start of the episode? Doesn't it open with Innocent Zero flying through the air on some dragons?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember that, actually.
I think that's how the episode opens. Because I think that's like, so this Innocent Zero thing, declaration isn't out of the blue. I think I remember that's how the episode opens, before it gets to the Macron versus Master.
I have no memory of that. I just remember the dragon appearing when he arrives. But
at the end, yeah. But that's not the first time we saw them this episode, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. All right, we get back to the battle, and Macron is... Now that he reveals that he is in his true form, this is how he really looks, or they really look, is as this very twinky, very young, youthful looking character. And now that they're in their true form, they can move at the speed of sound, and they're like zipping around, and they do kind of like a thing where they like snap their fingers every time they do it. They snap, and then they just suddenly they're in another place. And they even snap right up close to Mashal and then, like, kind of blows into Mash's ear with their breath.
Yeah, just give Mashal a little bit of spook.
Yeah, scare. Yeah. And Mash is not, like, weak here either. Mash is fast, too, and the people are recognizing this. He can move pretty quick, too. And he's kind of moving around as well. I wouldn't say they're evenly Mash, but Mash is kind of holding his own a little bit here. But in order to break the stalemate, Mash's solution is to put tartar sauce on Macaron's hand, which prevents him from being able to snap his fingers. Also, it's tartar sauce, which he loves. So it's kind of like a weird, like...
I assume it was, like, in his pocket or something, and Mash got it, like, stuck his hand in his pocket or did something. I assume the tartar sauce was on Macaron's person somewhere, just like Mash always has cream puffs on his person, and that's where he got the tartar sauce from. That's
yeah, my that makes sense. Went. Yeah. Well, it's enough to distract him for a moment. And then Then Macron's like, okay, I'm going to now use my secondeth.
Oh, I mean, we should have mentioned that MASH does a clothesline on Macron, knocks them like clear across the stadium, and then that's what prompts Macron to actually do his do their bankai.
So yeah, they have these things called secondeths in this show, which is such a stupid word. But it's just, yeah, it's like their super move, their like second level tier move, the secondeth. And this is called Sound Secondeth Death Gong. And Macron explains that here's how it works. This giant gong appears above them. And then he's going to have like 60 seconds or something like that. Doesn't matter. It's like 60, 30 seconds. I don't know. A minute. I don't know.
60 seconds.
Yeah. 60 seconds. And 60 seconds.
The gong goes off.
Yeah, and it said the only way you can prevent this is you have to break my wand. If you don't break my wand, this gong will go off and you will die. And I think I kind of was thinking to myself too. And then the show addressed it. I was like, what about the people watching? And because it's like in a 6 mile radius or something, or a kilometer radius. And they're like, well, I guess due to the magic of the arena, the viewers won't be affected. But anyway, it gets real close and it's getting close to the countdown. The countdown's reaching close to zero. And then MASH's solution is he just puts his hand down into the ground and he flips up the entire floor of the arena and like uses it as a big shield to prevent Macron from zipping around. It kind of corners him sort of. And then in the last moment, he gets real close. And we kind of get this sort of time slows down moment here where they're like real close to each other. And I forget exactly what MASH does in this moment, but he grabs the wand. I don't remember how he does. It's something about blocking.
He grabs, MASH lifts, breaks the ground, throws it at Macron, and busts through it. So Macron's movement is limited. They can only go left or right as opposed to zipping all over the place.
Yeah.
So Macron tries to figure out, okay, do I go left or do I go right? And then MASH does a feint, making Macron think he's going to go one direction. And so Macron jumps in the other direction, but MASH, of course, jumps towards him. And he's like, oh, it was a feint, but it doesn't matter. I'm still out of your reach. And then MASH grabs Macron's coat with his pinky.
Oh, pinky.
And pulls
that's
them
right.
into him. And then MASH will have to grab the wand and snap it.
Yeah. Yeah. It used his like, and like Macron's like, there's no way you can hold me with just your pinky. But of course, it's MASH. So he can do that. Or MASH. So yeah, he grabs it and snaps the wand, and Macron just accepts defeat. He's like, you did it. I can't believe you did it. I accept defeat gracefully. And then everyone's like, yay, MASH won. Or maybe not yay, but they're just all in shock. Oh my gosh, MASH beat him. But everything changes because suddenly there's a crack in the sky, and the sky kind of gets dark, and there's literal cracks forming in the sky, and we see a hole pop open, and out comes flying none other than Innocent Zero himself. And Innocent Zero he's like on a dragon, like we said.
Yeah, and he does a little Zawaldo and stops everyone.
He does. Yeah, and I recognize too, because you can't see his whole face, but I can see the lines on his face are like clock hands. So he obviously controls time. Makes sense. Yeah, he freezes everyone in place. Everyone, including MASH. And he kind of comes down onto the ground. He walks up to MASH and he's like, I'm finally here. I'm finally here. And I finally found you. I'm going to take you with me, my son.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay. Interesting. But before Innocent Zero can take him, Dumbledore appears.
Whatever his name is, actually, but I'm blanking too.
It's like starts with a Wheeler or something. It's like W something. I forget. Yeah, he's there. And now we're about to have a big Dumbledore versus Snape fight here at the end of the next episode.
It was shown that he was frozen in time as well, but obviously him being the most powerful mage around, he just shrugs it off and then comes down to confront Innocent Zero.
Yeah, I'm kind of realizing now, having seen most of the season here or getting close to the end,
close half the season left.
Yeah, you're right. It's only seven, but we're getting halfway through the season. But I'm realizing now when I think back to the opening is very much telling the story of the season because this has all been foretold, the arena stuff and some of the goofy jokes, and then also this moment here where we get a MASH Dumbledore and Innocent Zero face off. That's all in the opening. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there's definitely more hints to things coming up as well. If you'll notice as we move through the last few episodes that there's stuff that reflects what's happening opening as well.
Yeah, again, I imagine. Like I'm gonna watch it closer next week to kind of see what I can predict will happen. But yeah. But yeah, so there we go. Innocent Zero's here. Finally gonna see him do something for the first time. All right, then that is Mashal. Mostly a battle with Macron. And he doesn't really beat him. He sort of, like, Macron just sort of...
Well, he beats him well. I mean, he doesn't, like, knock Macron out, but he defeats all of Macron's major spells. So at this point, Macron has no more tricks to pull, so... He's not going to do a thirdith or fourthith or whatever.
Right, I guess that's true. And he's not, yeah. But I just think it's interesting that he didn't, like, beat Macron down. He just sort of, like, did enough that Macron was like, okay, I'll stop.
That's supposed to be like Callisto. His name was Callisto, right? Where he like broke his skull.
I forget that guy's name. Yeah.
What's the pain guy? His name's like Callisto or something, right?
It's been too long, dude. That was like a season ago. I don't remember.
No, it was like two episodes ago.
What?
Guy who hurt himself.
Oh, that guy. The guy with the pain thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was.
Okay. He basically breaks that guy's skull open, but
yeah. Well, that guy deserved it. The thing is that Macron doesn't strike me as a particularly like villainous character.
He's definitely more of the thrill of the hunt kind of guy, yeah. Or person or whatever, as opposed to Callisto, assuming that's his name, who was just like grade A eugenicist, Darwinist, supremacist, yeah. Like whatever you want to call it.
Like Macron's more just a little conceited, you know, but also, I guess, good enough to realize when he's been bested, which is kind of good. So I like that. All right. So that's it for Mashal. Let's move on to the final premiere of this block, which is One Piece. One Piece, episode 757, A Threat Descends, The Beast Pirates Jack. All right. Episode starts out, and we see that Law is still roaming around in the forest and has a Viva card pointing to Beppo and runs into his crew, and Beppo is there, and everyone's reunited, and his Law and his crew are finally reunited.
And I think that moment definitely hits... I don't know if harder, but definitely hits in a different manner when you realize that Law had no intention of actually reuniting with his crew.
That's true. Yeah, good point. And he does smile in this, which is rare for that character.
Yeah, Law's definitely happy to be alive. It's like this all worked out pretty well. But it was clear, like, he was definitely wasn't, you know, going on a kamikaze mission. So, but yeah, it's a nice kind of. The reunion is extra nice, I suppose, or poignant or whatever, just because it was never meant to be, but.
Yeah.
If he made sure it happened.
And I think like he recognizes like how faithful his crew is and how happy they are to see him. So it's nice. It's a nice moment. Well, anyway, in the dukedom, it's starting to become nighttime. We see the sun is going down and the bugs and the bioluminescent flowers in the forest are starting to light up and everything. And Wanda is leading the Straw Hats to their leader. Meanwhile, Luffy decides to like take a side stroll and drink out of some giant grapes just because he can. There's just more of this like Luffy like just being childish. That it's the stuff about Luffy. I'm not going to go into it. He rubs me the wrong way sometimes.
It's Luffy the being a shonen protagonist, basically.
Yeah, but like the worst kind. He will do things even if it embarrasses or puts his own shipmates at a disadvantage because he just wants to. And I don't like that. I don't like that.
True, yeah.
It's like have some courtesy, dude. But like that's where he's like, oh, he's just Luffy. And it's like, don't be like that. It's a minor thing. It's just when he does these things, it's like,
No, I think that's a completely fair criticism of his character. Like, that's definitely, like, a personality flaw that he has.
Like,
so,
even
yeah.
Goku. Like, even Goku can sometimes be a little bit that way, but he never goes to the lengths that Luffy does. I think Luffy goes further.
I don't know. Like, Goku definitely has his moments. Like, you can't... No one could forget the Cell and Senzubi moment.
I guess. But, like... Yeah. Yeah. They're kind of similar. No,
I totally understand the point you're making, though. It's completely
And I'm not trying to make a big deal out of it. Luffy's a beloved character. I get it. I think the live-action Luffy's better because he doesn't do this.
But, well, yeah, I mean, the live-action movie... I mean, not movie, series definitely sands off some of the shitty edges just because it's no longer anime characters. It's like human beings. So,
right.
Like, obviously, Sanji isn't like a sexual harasser because that just wouldn't really fly in a live-action contest. Like, yeah, so, yeah. Like... Yeah, they've definitely... The characters are still the characters, but definitely more human, so to speak.
Well, while they're walking, Wanda decides to talk about what was going on before the rest of the Straw Hats had arrived. And we get kind of a flashback, and we see Karu City back when everyone was there. It's very, like, Zootopia is what I wrote down here. It reminds me of that, where it's just like, big city first full of animal people, and they're just living their lives, and everything is great. Until suddenly something is crashing at their gate, and of course it's Jack. Jack the Draught. He's one of Kaido's calamities, and he is busting through the gate, and we see that Jack is actually a Zoan Devil Fruit user, and his Zoan Devil Fruit turns him into a mammoth.
So it's supposed to be like a woolly mammoth. So like it's it'll be one of those ancient Zoans that are extinct animals, basically.
Correct. Yes, exactly. Yeah, he's super powerful. And when him and those break into the forest, it's so like dramatic, and that it's so shocking that even Zunisha the elephant kind of roars in that moment. Then we see he has brought with him all his subordinates, and one of them, who we'd seen before briefly, is this character named Sheepshead. And Sheepshead kind of does these introductions of like, oh, this is Jack, and he's Jack the Draught and everything. And they explain that they are there for Raizo. We want Raizo. You have Raizo. Give us Raizo. And all the Minks are like, we don't know what you're talking about. There's no Raizo here. And then Jack is like, give us Raizo. He doesn't want to hear it and just starts smashing up the buildings. We get the commercial break. And when we come back, we get some more introductions to the various types of enemies that make up the beast pirates. So, like I said, Jack the Draught is one of the calamities. But then we have, he commands the pleasures to attack, and we see these people called the pleasures, which just sort of look like
normal pirates,
just normal guys. They have like, you know, they're wearing like horned helmets and stuff, but they're just like, you know, they're called the pleasures, and they start to attack the Minks, and they're going after like this little kid who like, oh no, mommy, oh no. And there's like a woman and this little child, and you think something really bad's about to happen to this little kid. And then suddenly the kid starts sparking their fists and just straight out decks these guys. And that's when you learn that all of the Minks, even the elderly and everyone, even children, they're all like strong. They all have the lightning power. And they're like, we may look like feeble citizens, but we know how to fight. And they start to put up a fight.
It is weird that I suppose all the Minks can do the electric ability. If you think it'd be restricted that to like animals actually have like electric abilities in real life, like if they're an eel Mink or a shark Mink or something, like there are animals in real life that can use electricity in that way. Not obviously not like in a Pikachu way because that's just fantasy, but in their like actual use electricity in interesting ways. But it's like all of them were just like, oh, they didn't really expect that. But I guess it's some kind of martial arts for them or something, or yeah. Biological innate, or
kind of a biological thing. And like, I think it's supposed to be related to the fact that they have fur on their body.
Oh, static electricity. Is that what's going
kinda, on? Kinda, but like, again, it's a magical thing as well. So don't think too much.
Yeah, obviously turned up to like 12, but if static electricity, okay. I suppose that makes sense if it's supposed to be static electricity because you're all have fur.
Right, okay, but not scientifically accurate, right? It's just sort of like...
Right, again, turned up to 12 because it's One Piece, but
right.
I'm just trying to figure out where it even, the thought would even come for something like this, but...
Yeah, there's more to it than that, but in this moment, just think of it that way. It's like, oh, they're all furred people, so they have, like, static electric power, basically.
Fair enough.
So even this little kid is putting up a fight. And, Jack refuses to stop fighting. The pleasures get kind of scared, and they're like, oh, no! And then Jack's like, stop, don't be such wimps. Okay, you gifters attack. And now this new wave of bad guys starts coming out. They're called the gifters. And this includes Sheep's Head and some of the others that we'd seen. And all these people have like weird parts of their bodies. You see like Sheep's Head has kind of like a horn on his arm. There's one guy that had a giant crab arm. People like with weird body types.
They're like fucked up like Zoan hybrids, it looks like. You know, like... All these parts of having Zoans, you can do the hybrid form, but the hybrid Zoans are like kind of there's a logic to their bodies still, even if like half man, half not. Like Lucci's, hybrid form, like the cat man, whereas these people are kind of like amalgamations of some like a claw, like a dude with like a claw for hand or something. It's kind of they like messed up a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. So, I've heard about. Like through culture osmosis, I've heard about like we've already talked about smile fruits in the show already. I've kind of heard about this cultural osmosis that smile are artificial devil fruits. So are these people smile users? Like that's why they have like fucked up. They're like kind of zones, but like fucked up. Is that because they're having artificial fruits?
Yes.
Okay, but I'm just like I've heard about some things through cultural osmosis. I don't have a lot of all the details, but I'm just piecing things together. Like we know they're artificial fruits. We know there were four Kaizos group. These people look like Zoans, but like fucked up Zoans. So it's like they've been using these artificial fruits. So that was just my train of thought. But
yeah. Well, so the battle's still going on. But then we cut back to real time to the current time, and they're still walking through the forest. And then Brooke kind of reminds everyone, he's like, okay, now guys, remember, this is kind of related to why you don't want to mention the Wano folks around the Minx. It's a very touchy subject, you know? And so like, I think Frankie kind of nods. He's like, okay, I understand. And then like someone else nods, Brooke's like, or, you know, whatever. And then of course, Luffy just does it.
If he's just like Leroy Jenkins. Weren't they looking for Cicely Rizzo? Hey guys, what are we like? Yeah, so.
He's like, weren't we looking for some guy named Rizzo? And of course, Wanda is like shocked and looks around and to be continued. I get it. Luffy's a free spirit. But again, read the room. Oh, it's frustrating sometimes watching him. Like, he causes his own friends. Like problems, but I guess it's funny. I don't know. Does it? I'm overreacting? I don't get it. Like, it's not endearing
because it's shonen and because Luffy and the Straw Hats are the main characters, it all works out. But like, realistically, it shouldn't work out some of the time. And probably if this were like a harder edged show,
yeah,
Luffy's nonsense would have gotten like one of the non-devil fruit users killed. Like Usopp or Nami would probably already be killed by now.
I think that's bullshit. Exactly right. I think the fact that it's more of a comedy, more of a silly show, more of a young, you know, like a more of an adventure show, you can make this joke and they can all just have like a whole moment and then it's like, that's it. Yeah, I don't know. I got to get over this because it bugs me. I like Luffy. I mean, generally, I like him. He's a good guy. I just, like, why do you do this, man? And then this will end up with somebody, probably Nami, hitting him on the back of the head, being going, you idiot, you shouldn't have done that. And then he'll just go, what? It's like, what do you think, dude?
So, one quick question. Is it Jack the Drought or Jack the Drought?
Drought.
I thought he was the drought because, like, as in, like, the lack of water. Because basically, it wasn't his subordinate make the point that whenever Jack roams through a city, whatever, it looks like it's been a drought because it's been so devastated.
Yeah, I think I wrote it down wrong in my notes. It's a drought, Drought is what it should be.
Yeah, okay. So that's why I was seeing this. I was like, Like you were pronouncing it a little weird too. I was like, did I?
Well, I was pronouncing it how I had it in my notes, but I had it in wrong. It's the drought.
Okay, all right, okay. And then was there a moment where, well, I would say it was interesting that Jack, the monkey elder Mink, was trying to reason with Jack, saying, "We don't know who this Ryuzo guy is, but if you want to take your men and just like early but respectfully search the premises for him, that's fine. We'll escort you. We'll do that with you," which would be the reasonable thing for Jack to agree to. Be, "I want this dude. If you're going to help me find this dude, all right, let's just do it. And only if you then resist will we fuck things up. But if you're just going to welcome us in and to search, then yeah, we'll do that." That's what a reasonable person would do. But Jack just wants blood. So he's just like, "Fuck this shit. I'm going to kill you all. For regardless of what you say, I'm going to kill you all," basically, is Jack's point of view.
Yeah, this is like just him being a bad guy, basically. He is like, "I don't care. I'm not going to." He kind of scoffs at it, I think. He's like, "Did you talk? No, I'm going to wreck your shit." He's just that's his personality. He's just he is like, they're supposed to be like, just like, I think they even said that Sheep's Head or somebody said that, like, he's called the Drought because, like, once he arrives in a location, he destroys the place in such a place that it looks like it had gone through a drought.
Right, yeah, that's part of the, I remember him saying that, which is part of why I remembered him being called the Drought, so that's why I like, brought that up earlier. But it was just interesting, because the reasonable thing for to happen would be to Jack to agree to this and then do the search.
Oh, yeah.
And then only if he thinks the Minks are, like, you know, hiding something, then you could escalate. But Jack's just not interested in doing the easy way. He wants to do it the hard way, which is okay.
I just chalk that up as him being villainous and being like,
right. I assume that's, he's just unreasonably dickish, like, because some characters in One Piece are just unreasonably, like, pieces of shit. Like, they were always pieces of shit, but you could be like a reasonable piece of shit, and then this guy's just like, "I just want
to fuck shit." It might have benefited him to do that, but because he's a dick, he's not going to do it. He's just going to be like, "No, I'm just going to wreck your town instead."
And so Nami and other Straw Hats arrive after this already happened. They didn't interrupt it, right? They arrived after it already happened?
No, they were there when it was happening, I believe.
Okay, so I thought I remembered them intervening, but I was like, did I remember that right, or did I make that up? Because you didn't mention that, so I was like, oh, maybe I made it up in my head. But so they did intervene at the end there then, did they? Or?
Well, they were there when Jack was attacking, because we actually saw that during the little, like, cutaway during Dressrosa when they were there.
Like a while back, like I threw a couple episodes ago, but did they intervene in this flashback, or am I just mixing things up in my head?
Well, this is the beginning of it. I don't know if the Straw Hats have arrived at this point in the flashback, but they're going to be there.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how else to explain it to you. Like, I you know what, to be honest, I don't really remember if they're there or not. They might be there, and they just haven't shown up in the flashback yet, but they'll be there regardless. Because the Minks consider them pivotal in helping to save them from Jack's attack.
I just couldn't remember if that happened now or if I just made that up in my head, but regardless, okay.
Well, not now, only because Jack has just arrived, like, in the sense that he just went through the gates, like, literally 10 minutes ago. So,
sure.
All right, and that is it for One Piece. So pretty stacked block, I think, this week as far as, like, stuff that's going on in every show.
Yeah, for the last Toonami of the year, that's, like, fresh episodes, I thought it was pretty strong.
Yeah. I don't even think I don't think anything particularly amazing stood out in any of these shows as far as, like, making a nomination, unless you can think of something. I'm feeling like it's kind of,
like, I'm skeptical it win best fight of the year, but I don't know. Would the Mashle versus Macron fight be strong enough to at least be worth a nomination? It feels like it would be, even though I'm skeptical it win.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, like, I thought it was fine. But, like, nothing amazing happened in the fight, and it felt pretty predictable. I expected Macaron to just use musical sound powers to attack Mash, and Mash to do something, and that's kind of what happened. And it wasn't, like, nothing a super... Like, the only thing that surprised me was when we saw Macaron's true form. That was the only thing that was unusual. With that said, we probably should talk a little bit about what's going to happen here in the next few weeks. So, obviously, this upcoming weekend is going to be the Dandadan Marathon. We will not be doing a show following that, because it's just going to be one new episode potentially. So we're not going to do that. Seda wouldn't be able to be here anyway. And it won't be till after the new year until we get a block full of new episodes. So we can be back after that weekend, but we probably should start talking a little bit about, like, when do we want to do an awards show? We don't have to do it right at the beginning of the year. We can do it whenever. It's just, when do you want to do it? When works for us?
I mean, it's typically in either one or two weekends, either the end of January or the beginning of February is usually when you've done it. It's just a matter of, like, finding out, because it takes long enough. It has to be on a weekend. So it's just a matter of finding out when we're all free to either do it in one weekend or do it split it over two weekends, depending on how long you think it's going to take.
Okay. Well, I'll put a message in the Discord about it and kind of like just to get a feel for what people think when we want to do it. But we need to do that. And then we should probably need, someone needs to post in the Reset Era thread.
About the asking for nominations.
Yeah. Ask for nominations for those awards that require nominations. But yeah, I'd like to get some feedback from some people as well. That's probably where we'll put a couple of nominations in there that might not necessarily need to be in there, but we'll do it just out of good faith.
Right. Usually do that, I think, once New Year. Do we do that like January 1st or 2nd? I think that's what we've done in the past, right?
I don't remember. That's what the thing is. Oh, it was always Grexino who did that, so I don't know.
Yeah.
So
you can just ask him. I mean, he's like, yeah. Obviously.
Well, again, I'm going to post I'll post some when I think about it next. I'll post in the Discord about what we think we should do. And, get some feedback. I'd like to get some more people on too, obviously. We can ask
Grexino. He might want to show up for that. I don't know. Like, I don't know how close he's been following the block last few weeks, but he might want to show up.
Well, I definitely know he's been on watching. He's been group watching with us. I've seen him in the thread. So he might be caught up enough to want to be involved in the awards. And then, you know, someone like Sketch could also come on if he wants to be a part of it.
True.
We haven't heard from. We haven't heard from Chug in forever. I don't know if he would want to do it, but he's welcome to come back on as well. So if any of you guys hear this and you want to be on the award show, just post in the Discord. Let us know if you want to be on, and we'll be happy to have you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll just have these conversations over the next few weeks. So,
yeah, it'll be, yeah, just kind of, I'm just fishing right now. I'm just sort of throwing it out there and being like, hey, think about it. If you want to, let us know. So yeah, that'll be coming up. But again, no new episode next week. We won't be back for another 2 weeks. And I think that's it for this episode. So we'll go ahead and wrap it up. That'll be it for episode 459, or 55, excuse me, 455. Thanks for being here, Crocodile.
My pleasure, and happy holidays to everyone.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, and happy holidays to you as well. Again, won't be back next week. We will see you in 2 weeks. And until then, later.
See you in a new year.
Later.